This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
It's Street Knowledge. I'm your host, Jeff Fife, with AFP editor Chris Graham. And we're going to talk a little Hoos basketball, both who's in the NBA, who's has the best chance of winning the ACC tournament. We're going to go over the ACC awards that were announced today and just talk about really the 8 years of dominance of the Virginia Cavaliers in the ACC here lately. But before I do, I have to tell you, Chris, I've got some envy. I am sitting with a white wall with one, two little framed items, and I'm realizing I need to up my game if I'm going to do some Zoom.
Yeah, for our people listening on the podcast, and Jeff, you're a regular listener to the podcast. You don't get the full effect if you watch the videos, and I post the videos of these to Facebook as well. I've had a year to work on this. I mean, literally just about a year, 51 weeks to work on this. I've got it all set up. I've got Jackie Robinson jersey, Trey Turner jersey, Malcolm Brogdon. I could have many, many more jerseys hanging up here.
You've got hats. For those listening via podcast, you'll have to pull up the video on the AFP site too.
Oh, there's Final Four tickets from those were Crystal's tickets to the Final Four from a couple years ago. My seat placard, which is I'm pointing to it right here on the video. There's baseballs. There's a championship hat up here that Crystal bought in the Final Four arena. There's a lamp from the movie A Christmas Story. Gosh, I'm seeing a picture. I should Crystal's told me at some point I should just do a whole podcast slash video on the stuff in the background, because I see a picture of Lita down there in the corner. There's a Mick Foley behind me if I move. Yeah, at some point I could probably do a couple hours just on all that stuff back there.
You could. Oh, we could have an auction and make some money. I think there's a charity somewhere out there that we may want to promote and push. It's interesting because you and I were together watching wrestling last night, and during the pregame, getting a little bit of UVA chat. And as you and I tend to do, we start to wax poetic about the Hoos and realize there's a podcast tucked in here. So here we are. I love, you mentioned I'm a listener, I'm a loyal listener. And occasionally I'll just randomly call you and go, what do you think about this? And, this is sort of the basis of some of these questions, 'cause I just wanted to pick your brain. I was blown away when, Florida State opened the door, for the Cavaliers, and we ended up, winning five of the last eight ACC regular season titles. And it didn't occur to me till I heard that at the end of the post-game press conference. It didn't seem like Tony recognized it was five out of eight either, listening to his response. But it made me think, wow, that's a lot. You know, you and I go way back in the world of watching Cavalier basketball. I've never seen a run of dominance like this, and we're getting up there with some of the blue bloods and some of their history. I mean, we got a lot more banners to put in the rafters for sure, but I'll take the last five out of 8 years, and a national championship tucked in there. Let's talk statistics, because I love picking your brain about statistics. You know, where is Virginia in this 8 year window in comparison to, you know, current ACC teams and some of the run of dominance we've seen in past decades in the ACC with other squads? How does this rank?
Well, I didn't do that. I did do some homework, though. You at least tipped me off that you were going to ask this question. So because I wouldn't have had the exact numbers from memory, but I did go through the last 8 years. At least for the top teams. I didn't quite get everybody. I went from UVA, Duke, UNC, Florida State, and Louisville. I was going to do Syracuse, and I found out that Syracuse only had the 1 year at the beginning of this 8 year run by UVA. Basically, they've been 500 the last 7 years. So that puts in perspective some things. But here are the numbers, and I should post these eventually too to the website. So I'll say them, and then we'll go over them again, because they're stark is what they are. Virginia in the ACC, just ACC records in the last 8 years, 117-28. Duke is second, 101-45. That's 16 and a half games of a margin, over the 8 years for UVA. Third is UNC, 95-49. Florida State is next, 86-57. And then Louisville. Now, Louisville wasn't in the ACC in 2013, 2014. They didn't join until a year later. So 79-55. So Those are the teams that have been the contenders in the last 7 or 8 years, and in Louisville's case, 7 years, at the top of the ACC. Virginia has 16 more wins than Duke, 22 more than UNC, 31 more than Florida State, 38 more than Louisville. That's the run of dominance from this this current group.
My wall behind me pretty much is a metaphor of Virginia Tech's trophy case. It's pretty empty. You know, what does it take to build? What was that number again? 121?
117 and 28.
117 and 28. Is it all come down to Tony Bennett? I mean, how do you start building that level of dominance over an 8 year span? It seems hard to be able to maintain something like that. And obviously the only consistency over that past 8 years seems to be Tony. Do you give him that nod for the reason why we are where we are right now?
I'll say it this way. You know, I've written and co-written two books on UVA basketball. The most recent one, the one about the national championship season a couple years ago, Team of Destiny, there's a placard right there for it. And then back in 2006, I co-wrote a book, History of University Hall book called Mad About You. And I will be honest with you. When we wrote that book in 2006, I thought I was writing a history book about a program that had seen its best history and would not see that again. The 4 years of the Ralph Sampson era, the 1979 to 83 seasons. And that was based on one guy, and that's not repeatable. When it's one guy who happens to stay for 4 years, a guy like that would not stay for 4 years. He would stay for 1 year if he even came to Virginia. He would stay for 1 year, and so that was a fluke. I mean, you know, Terry Holland had an ACC tournament championship before Ralph. They went to a Final Four the year after Ralph, but. You know, aside from those Ralph years, the Virginia program in the Terry Holland era, the Jeff Jones era, was a 20-win team that would be fifth or sixth in the ACC. Well, actually, now they'd be fifth or sixth. They'd be third or fourth in the ACC. Then it was only eight or nine teams back then. You could maybe aspire to be a five seed in the NCAA tournament. And that was – and we were fine with that. I mean, that was good. We were happy. Every three or four or five years, we'd make a run to the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight and fine. So, you know, then we went through the end of the Jeff Jones era, the Pete Gillen era, just one NCAA tournament appearance in the Gillen era, just one in the Dave Lato era. And then this guy named Tony Bennett that nobody on this side of the country heard of gets hired as the coach. And remember in 2009, when he got hired, everybody wanted Tubby Smith. Who's Tony Bennett? He's this guy. He's an assistant coach, and he was a coach at Washington State for a couple of years. He's 39 years old. He's going to play boring basketball. When you look at the stats of their games, they're scoring in the 40s. I remember my wife Crystal saying, "Chris, are you going to like basketball with a score in the 40s and 50s?" And I said, "As long as we have one more point than the other team most games, yeah, I actually probably will." But I was lying when I said that. No, I didn't want to see that kind of basketball. It's Tony Bennett, and it's a system. And, you know, now I've become a basketball snob. I think a lot of us probably have who follow UVA basketball. We now dive into the efficiency numbers the way we never did before. We love our pack line defense, the mover blocker offense. We can all sit there and diagram plays, and we know what they're supposed to do, and it's fun. I mean, we applaud shot clock violations. We love it when we hold opponents under 50. We love it when teams give up. Louisville gave up on Saturday. Did you notice that when they got down eight, they made a three, got it to eight. The dunk by Trey Murphy made it 10. They missed a shot and just waved the white flag. We've seen Roy Williams do that a few times. We've seen other coaches do that. Chris Mack just waved the flag. We love that now. We love bludgeoning teams in that respect. So, but it's a system, and the best coaches out there have a system, and Tony has a system. It's not the most exciting system for the casual fan. But we get upset when people say that it's not exciting because, yes, a shot clock violation is exciting. Yes, winning 60-48 is exciting when you're beating Duke or Carolina or Louisville in a game like that. So it's Tony Bennett, and he recruits to his system. He stayed true to his roots. And it's perfect for UVA because it requires kids who are going to commit for 4 years. It requires smarter kids to be able to play that system. It's not the kind of system where you just say, go play. It fits UVA perfectly. So, boy, we, you know, the folks who hired Tony Bennett, you know, Craig Little Page and crew, back in that day, they gave us a gift that we'll keep on giving.
I think of, we seem to have ascended along with the same curve of Ken Pom and Ken Pomeroy and his stats, and it's a stat world. And you think about what team DeAndre Hunter, your first round NBA pick, a lottery pick, who gets redshirt. Where does that happen anywhere, and when will it ever happen again? I mean, I would agree the system side of things. Can you throw a dart on the wall on the board and say it started here? I mean, is there a specific, is it a player? Is it a game? Is there something? I mean, a lot of people talk about that Tennessee shellacking that we got, and I don't even know what year that was.
That was the 2013, 2014 year. Yeah.
And is there a start to this dominance that you can pinpoint?
In terms of a game, you know, people will point to that game. I would point to, I mean, the game that stands out to me is that same year, about 3 weeks later. That game with Tennessee was the end of the calendar year 2013. And that team had already lost. I mean, I remember you and I having a conversation in your office at the YMCA in Waynesboro before that season. And you thought, man, this Virginia team is going to win the ACC this year. And I thought you were crazy. And then they started 9-4. And not just the loss to Tennessee, they lost to Green Bay. They lost the opener, I think it was VCU, and then they had a 48-38 loss to Wisconsin. And then the Tennessee game was ugly. 89-54, I think, was the final score, and it wasn't a high possession game. It was still a 60-possession-ish game. Tennessee just scored 89 points in that game. And what happened after that was what was interesting, and we saw it again this past weekend. Joe Harris, the famous meeting with Coach Bennett, hey, you know, we need to do some things different. And what they did different then was, you know, Tony had started that season saying, we got all this talent. You know, we've got that, you know, they had Malcolm Brogdon, they had Anthony Gill, they were integrating into the mix. He was a transfer from South Carolina. You had Justin Anderson in the mix. You know, you had a lot of guys. Leonard Parentes was a freshman. And, but Tony had erred on the side of, let's put more talent on all the talent we can put on the floor at one time, as opposed to maybe the best chemistry. And Joe Harris was the one who said, look, we need to have Justin off the bench. We need to have London Parentes starting. And now, you know, Justin ended up being a first round draft pick. London's been a career G League guy, but that move made that team better. And they went from there and went 16-2 in the ACC, won the ACC tournament, got to the Sweet 16, probably should have won the Sweet 16 game with Michigan State, would have if Anthony Gill doesn't sprain his ankle. But to me, the game that where it really was noticeable was the Super Bowl Sunday game. They played Pitt, back when Pitt was really good. They had just come from the Big East, really good Pitt team. And Virginia won on a three-pointer at the buzzer on Super Bowl Sunday. And that's when it really jumped out to me. And in fact, I was down – it might have been that same week. I went down to Duke and watched Virginia lose to Duke, and it was one of their two losses, as it turned out. And I remember when Duke won that game, and they won, it was a 1 or 2 point win at Duke, and then Coach K ran off the floor hugging his assistant coaches. He was rah-rah, everything else. And I actually said to the person I was with, This is interesting. Coach K, who's won five, at that point had won four national championships, it was on his way to his fifth a couple years later, thinks this was it was like early January, mid-January. This was a big win for him. He's celebrating in Cameron, beating this Virginia team. At that point, we're still thinking, who are we? We're like 12-5 or whatever we were. He knows something that I don't know about the significance of beating this Virginia team. He was right. It turned out that was a big win for that Duke team. So, no, as far as a recruit, it's easy to look back and say Malcolm Brogdon, because Malcolm Brogdon is the most important player of the Tony Bennett era. He didn't win a national championship, but man, oh man, he willed that team to 3 years of wins. And without Malcolm Brogdon, I don't think the rest of it happens.
I find it interesting you bring up Duke, because I wanted to pick your brain about sort of the trajectory of Duke and if this is an aberrant season because of COVID, or if the system that you talked about earlier in the podcast related to recruiting four-year players versus recruiting one, if that's going to be a more dominant system trending in the future. Because you get one or two kids that are one and dones and they don't pan out, like they lost their top recruit this year who left early to prepare for the NBA. You know, what happened to Duke this year? And are we going to start to see the Dukes, the Carolinas, even the, you know, Kentucky struggled a little bit at the beginning of the season, but they've recovered.
No, they have not recovered. They're 8-15.
They're 8-15.
So they're 8-15. Yeah. We don't watch a lot of non-ACC, but they're awful. Yeah.
Are we seeing the trend away from one and dones now? Do you see Virginia continuing this trending of dominance? I worry about what happens when you lose Huffenhauser, but the last three or four seasons, I go, we're going to lose these two kids. They go in the NBA and boom, they're still producing.
Now, I had to correct myself. 9-15. They won over the weekend. Kentucky did. So, I'm going to hold the book out on that. I mean, the one and done rule may go away. The NBA and the NBA Players Association have been talking for a couple of years off and on as they were getting ready to renegotiate their CBA, their basically their labor agreement that may take that rule away. Essentially taking away the requirement that that high school players have to be a year out or players have to be a year out before they can be drafted. Year out of high school, that is, to be drafted. I'll eventually get that right. And so that will take the one and done rule away. And if it doesn't go away, this year is such a weird year. So I'm just going to throw that out just in the sense of because of the teams that do rely on influx of the talent every year. This year, you know, you didn't have the same walk up to the season. In terms of you could have drills, but you know, the practices have been weird because you can't, you know, the guys can't hang out with each other after games, before games, whatever. They get their meals delivered to them. They, you know, the practices have been limited. They didn't have scrimmages. A lot of the non-conference games that are usually tune-ups were eliminated for COVID reasons. And so that hurts the teams that don't have the longevity. You know, the Dukes and Kentuckys, even Carolina this year, had some veteran guys back, but also had, you know, four of their five incoming guys were five stars. One was a 4.5 star recruit. You know, those teams with an influx of talent, normally they just get better because they have all that practice time. They can be on campus in August and just work and work and work, and then they get good. They didn't have that this year. So I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater as far as that goes. But I will say that you look at the last several national champions, you know, Virginia is they're still the reigning champion, you know, with at that point, a three-year group, you know, the Villanova and Carolina teams that traded a couple of championships were veteran groups. The teams that are good this year, Gonzaga and Baylor, are veteran groups. You know, the teams who are consistently good this year, veteran groups. I do think that, I mean, that there is a benefit to that, and there's been a long-term benefit to that. The last one-and-done champion was Duke in 2015. And so that's a ways back now at this stage. Those programs win games during the regular season, but something happens and they don't win championships. So there is a value to what Tony does. There's a value to what Mark Few does and some other guys as well.
You and Crystal have bought the NBA League Pass. You're watching G League games, you're watching the regular NBA games, and typically you seem to put your viewing pleasure around where the Virginia players are in the ACC. Can you talk to me a little bit about these last 8 years that we discussed at the beginning of the podcast? Who are the players that have come out of this system, and where are they now from you know, the Harrises and the Brogdons that you talked about, to the new crop that even Momedy just getting called up in theory. Talk to us a little about the who's in the NBA and what are they doing to help their squads?
Once a week, and I haven't done it yet this week, but once a week I do have a regular column called Who's in the Pros. Not just the NBA, but then G League and overseas. And so I'll give a quick overview. These numbers are not updated as of this week yet. Of course, we had the All-Star break, so they're not too far off. Everybody knows Malcolm Brogdon and, you know, Joe Harris, DeAndre Hunter. Brogdon's averaging 21 a game in Indiana. He's making $20 million a year. He's doing pretty well for a guy that I remember interviewing him after UVA beat Harvard back in, I think it was 2015 or early, maybe it was 2016. And he said his final two college choices were UVA and Harvard. I don't think of a lot of Harvard guys, you know, making $20 million in the NBA. But when he chose UVA, he said his grandmother was upset with him. Basically, son, don't you realize what a Harvard degree can do for you in life, is what her message was to him. Things turned out okay for Malcolm in that respect. But he's doing great in Indiana. DeAndre Hunter injured. He's due back probably later this month, but he was having a great sophomore season in the NBA, 17.2 a game, 51% from the field, 36.6% from three in Atlanta, an emerging franchise, a lot of us think. Joe Harris, of course, plays on the All-Star team, known as the Brooklyn Nets, averaging 14.9 a game, shooting over 50% from three, because basically what he does is stand there and shoot wide open threes because of all the attention all those other guys get. You mentioned Mami Diakite getting called up. He will be with the Milwaukee Bucks, their first game back from the All-Star break. Ty Jerome also recently got called up. He was not sent down to the G League. He had suffered a sprained ankle back in training camp that just lingered for weeks and weeks. Then he went to the G League to rehab. Since he got back, he's averaging 12 points and 4.5 assists a game off the bench, and he probably will be starting for them soon. He spent his rookie season in Phoenix, got traded as part of that Chris Paul trade. Worked out great for him. He's going to be a key player on a up-and-coming young team. Can't forget Mike Scott. He was the holdover from the Dave Leto era that played for a couple of years for Tony. He's still in Philadelphia, still coming off the bench and shooting threes. He's been around for quite a while. He left UVA in 2012, probably left with his master's degree because he was there for so long. We got a couple other guys in the NBA. Kyle Guy has been in the NBA all season. He was a G League / NBA guy last year. This year, he's not getting a lot of time, but he's been with the Sacramento Kings all season long. Anthony Gill is a surprise. He's not getting a lot of playing time. Gill had spent the last several years. He graduated from UVA in 2016. He'd spent the last several years in Europe, actually doing really well. But he finally got an NBA job with the Washington Wizards. And he's started a couple games, but he's not getting a lot of playing time as of late. I'll quickly go through, because I know I could go all day. We talked about Diakite. Diakite in the G League was averaging 18 points a game, 10 rebounds a game, shooting 57.5% from the field, 50% from three. Some good numbers, obviously, from Mamadi. London Perentes is still kicking around in the G League. He's with the Austin Spurs, the San Antonio Spurs affiliate. Getting some playing time. He's a bench guy, but he's getting about 25 minutes a game, 7.5 points, 5 assists a game. Braxton Key actually caught on with the Delaware Bluecoats. Not getting a lot of playing time, but Braxton Key's in the G League. I'll quickly go through these overseas names. And if anyone jumps out, let me know. Nigel Johnson is in Kosovo. Mariel Shayok is in Turkey. Akil Mitchell is in Israel. Darius Thompson in Italy. Darion Atkins is in Turkey. Billy Barron, you might not remember that name. He only played for 1 year at UVA. I count him. He played for 1 year. He's in Russia playing. Mike Toby, the predecessor in a lot of people's minds to Jay Huff, is playing in Spain, doing well. Devin Hall and Isaiah Wilkins are both in Germany. So we got a lot of guys, a lot of names from recent past, still making money playing basketball.
You know, from where our guys in the NBA to where our guys are right now, we're recording this on Monday before the tip-off of the ACC tournament tomorrow, and the awards were announced for Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, the first, second, third team honors, Defensive Player of the Year. Talk to us about Moses Wright getting the nod as Player of the Year and Sam Hauser coming in fifth in the voting. Where did you, what do you think of him getting, Moses getting that Player of the Year? Because I didn't see that coming.
I didn't see it coming either. No, I mean, in a way, I did a piece yesterday. This is the time of year you got to work every day in basketball season, because basketball season is fleeting at this stage. And so Sunday I wrote a piece breaking down who I thought ACC Player of the Year was going to be or should be. And I'll be honest, when I sat down at the computer, the thought in my head was, all right, let's make the case for Sam Hauser. That was sort of what my operational motivation was. Let's make the case for Sam Hauser. And then I started looking at the numbers, and the numbers told me you can't make the case for Sam Hauser because Jay Huff is the Player of the Year. From a deep analytical standpoint, not counting numbers. UVA players, as we know, do not have counting numbers because, you know, the pace, the tempo, number of possessions per game, just not what lends itself to adding up the counting numbers. You know, Hauser averaged 15.8 a game. I figured out if UVA played at the normal pace, the average pace in Division I is 68 possessions a game. UVA plays 60. If you extrapolate Hauser's numbers out, he averages 18.5 a game. He leads the ACC in scoring. But even that said, Jay Huff, when you look at the deep dive numbers, and to me, the two most important numbers, and I'm not sure if they're even in this order, but player efficiency ranking, that's something that we hear a lot and see a lot in the NBA. And then there's box plus minus. So player efficiency takes into account your offensive rating, your defensive rating. I mean, it's an all-encompassing number. It's not just your points per game, rebounds per game, shooting percentage, block shots. It takes into account your one-on-one defense. It takes into account your passing. It takes into account all that kind of stuff. And then the box plus minus is sort of like the hockey equivalent of plus minus, you know, basically how your team does when you're on the floor in terms of score. Jay Huff was first in the ACC by far in player efficiency ranking. He was first in the ACC by far in box plus minus. He on the floor is worth 12.3 points per game to UVA. Sam Hauser was second at 10.6 points a game, and no one else was over 10 points per game. So from an analytical standpoint, so Jay was first in the ACC in defensive rating. He was third in the ACC in offensive rating. I mean, it jumps out at you when you start looking at the analytics. That's your player of the year. Moses Wright, okay, good counting numbers, 18 points a game, 8.1 rebounds a game, 54% from the field, 39% from three. Not ranked in the top 10 in offensive rating, not ranked in the top 10 in defensive rating, not ranked in the top 10 in box plus minus. One that jumped out to me, too, was Jose Alvarado, a Georgia Tech teammate of Moses Wright, was defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
He's not even in the top 20 in defensive rating in the ACC. The reason he was ranked defensive, he was voted defensive player of the year because he led the league in steals.
Right.
Accounting numbers.
I'm giving that to Goldwire myself, but, you know, I don't know. I guess, I mean, he did a good job on Hauser when he played him. Maybe he got that nod because he got to play a couple big men and the big men didn't have the scoring. I mean, we only had one Virginia player in the first team, one Virginia player represented Huff in the second team, an honorable mention with Kihei, didn't even get a 13 player yet. Virginia is still the number one seed going into the tournament. And Tony Bennett doesn't get coach of the year. Mike Young does.
Mike Young should have been coach of the year, by the way, without question.
So you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Mike Young was Virginia Tech was picked 11th in the ACC in the preseason. They finished third. To me, and that's the only metric that matters there. If Leonard Hamilton somehow was a close second, his team was ACC regular season champion last year. They were picked third. They finished second. He didn't improve much on what he was picked. Mike Young was picked to be playing on Tuesday. He's playing on Thursday in the ACC tournament. The race was him, was Mike Young and Josh Pastner, because right. Georgia Tech was picked ninth and finished fourth. You know, Leonard Hamilton and Tony Bennett shouldn't have been anywhere in the conversation because they were picked high and they finished high.
Let's look at, let's do some forecasting. Vegas has said that Florida State has the best odds of winning the ACC tournament this year. Virginia second. Duke kind of way down there in the center, a little bit higher than Clemson and Syracuse, I find, interestingly enough. But, you know, who do you think – I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who wins the ACC tournament this year?
Florida State seemed like a fine choice to me. You know, Virginia would love to play them again on Saturday night just because – of the egg that was laid in Tallahassee a few weeks ago now. You know, Florida State, it's odd. They obviously played so well in that game, and then they blew two games down the stretch. They had to lose two of their last three to lose the regular season. They had to lose to Carolina, and then they inexplicably losing to Notre Dame. And not just losing to Notre Dame, but, you know, Notre Dame had a 19-point lead in the first half. Florida State cut it to four late, but lost by 10. I mean, that is inexcusable. You're playing on the floor for an ACC championship, and you're playing a 9-14 team. You got to go out there and win that game. I don't care who you are. But they matched up well with Virginia, obviously. I mean, they won by 21 points, except for a brief run in the second half, controlled the entire game. Their athleticism and the wave of players Leonard Hamilton can send, he played Virginia well. I think it's interesting, Virginia's tweaks since that game and then, in the three-game losing streak, Tony Bennett's made some tweaks to the approach. I'd love to see the new team. I say the new team, the new mix playing this Florida State team. I'm glad that, from the perspective of the way seeding works out, you wouldn't play until Saturday night if you got that far. I mean, Virginia was standing in line to they could play NC State, a team that beat them in the Thursday game, because I think NC State Syracuse is the feed-in game to Virginia's game on Thursday. You could theoretically play Virginia Tech on Friday, a team that beat you. And so a chance for Virginia to get some, payback a little bit. But also, from my standpoint, from this Virginia team, I think they just need some reps with this new alignment that Tony's been tweaking. They just need to get some guys used to playing in different combinations. And I think if they can get two or three games in this week, I think that'll be good for this Virginia team heading into next week.
I'm sensing the sense of the new book title coming up, Chris. Payback. We've had Team of Destiny 2 years ago. This is going to be the Team of Payback this year. Let's burn through those teams that beat us this year and have the orange and blue ticker tape shot out onto the court come Saturday night. Are there any teams in the bottom half of the seedings that you see as a potential to that little Cinderella story? And I'd hate to put the Cinderella on Duke. It just doesn't make any sense to say those two words. Just watching them Tuesday night is going to give me an extreme level of pleasure that I shouldn't have. But is there a team out there that could get to the championship game that's in that back end seed that you think has a shot?
I mean, Duke would be a team playing on Tuesday. Of the teams playing on Tuesday, they'd be the team. I mean, Pitt had an interesting season. I'm curious how they fell to 7. And I don't pay attention to the other teams as closely after they play Virginia, if we don't play them again. They played Virginia, I thought, pretty well, but that was on February 6th. And I'm now looking at Pitt's resume, and they finished 1-5 down the stretch here. So, yeah, that's actually 1-5, and one win was over Wake Forest. I remember scouting them and thinking, man, that's a pretty good team. So I'm curious as to that. Duke, similar. I mean, Duke obviously beat Virginia and then lost their last three and laid the huge egg against North Carolina, a game. You got to win that game. You win that game, you're probably sewing up a final, four spots in kind of thing in the NCAA tournament. You lose, and you're playing on Tuesday. But their talent suggests to me that they could be there. NC State would be the – if I could just pick one team, and, of course, they're playing on Wednesday. NC State impressed the heck out of me, not just when they beat Virginia, but when they – even the loss in Raleigh. And of course, they've won five straight, including that one over Virginia. I mean – two of those were Pitt, one was Wake, one was Notre Dame. But, I liked what Kevin Keats, he lost Devin Daniels back on January 27th in their win over Wake, and they lost four of their next five. I liked what I saw the second time through when Virginia played them. And, of course, they won the game in Charlottesville in terms of what he did to adjust his lineup. So, they have one less day to play than Duke does. And so that could be a big advantage for NC State. I just like the way they're playing right now. That would be, if that qualifies, I think they're the 9 seed. If they qualify as an upset, they're a team to me that could win some games next week or this week.
I'll ask you one more forecasting question and get you out of here. Josh Pastner said the ACC should have 10 teams. I love his energy. How many do you think we get into the NCAA tournament this year?
I'm going to go with 5, maybe 6 locks. Virginia, obviously, Florida State, obviously. I'm going to give Virginia Tech a lock. They're in a weird place, though. Virginia Tech, has only played 20 games. They, you know, they've missed the last couple of weeks. They're going to play on Thursday as a 3 seed with a double bye. And you know, they're going to play somebody who's not had the last couple of weeks off. It's going to be tough because if they lose that game and then they're going to get seeded in the NCAA tournament based on playing, you look at their schedule. I'm going to pull it up real quick here. They've played twice since February 6th. Wow. If they happen to lose their opener, you know, and thus their only game in Greensboro, they'll have played 3 games in a month and a week. You know, the NCAA tournament selection committee is going to probably devalue them seed wise, based, you know, from where they probably should be, because how can you seed them? They'll have played 3 times in, you know, 50 days or whatever it is. That's going to be tough for Tech. But their profile suggests they're a lock. Georgia Tech, Georgia Tech a couple weeks ago was very much fighting for its life and was very much on the wrong side of the bubble. They've won, you know, 6 straight. So, and you know, their last couple losses were a tough one to Virginia and then a tough one to Clemson. At Clemson, they lost by 2, and they've won 6 straight since. And included in that stretch, win at Virginia Tech by 16 and a win over a Syracuse team that pretends to be a NCAA tournament team and a win over a Duke team that somehow thinks is an NCAA tournament team. Georgia Tech is a lock. I give Carolina a lock. I give Clemson a lock. Those are all teams that are in the, you know, the top 40 of the various metrics that are out there, and they're all going to be teams. Louisville, you know, I'm curious as to why their metrics aren't very good, but their metrics aren't very good. They're 13-6, they're 8-5 in the ECC. Obviously, if they had won against Virginia on Saturday, they would have been a double bye team. And now, you know, the metrics say that they're in trouble. So I'll go with the metrics. They're in trouble. They have to do something in Greensboro. And that something better not be lose on Wednesday. They lose on Wednesday, they're probably not in. Syracuse is another one. Syracuse, you know, gosh, I don't understand, again, the metrics as to why, but they're right there with Louisville. And so if I'm given 6 locks, I'm given 2 iffies, and then NC State and Duke, they're probably both teams that have to win the thing to get in. No, I don't see how you get to 10. If, you know, Josh Pastner, yeah, good sales job, checks in the mail, no way.
What's on tap for ACC, the AFP fans this week on your ACC coverage? What can they expect to see coming from the AFP?
Well, one thing I'm going to do, I'm going to do a more formal look at those resumes. This year I got kind of caught up against the wall with this. Last year I did so many of these things and then we didn't even have a tournament that I think I let my guard down a bit this year, even though we knew there's not going to be a canceled tournament this year. But, you know, what I did last year was I would bring in the NCAA tournament selection committee uses 4 main metrics, the NET ranking, the KPI ranking, Jeff Sagarin, the ESPN BPI, Basketball Power Index. I'll go through those. I'll look at the Quad 1 and Quad 2 records for each of the contenders. I probably won't spend so much time on Virginia, Florida State, maybe some time on Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and the rest, just to break down what those teams need to do. Even the Virginias and Florida States are playing for seeding at this stage. But we'll look in depth at the I might go as far as 10 just to please Josh Pastner as far as that goes. But we'll look at all the resumes and then kind of help that. That should help hopefully folks when they're watching this week. Know, if Duke loses on Tuesday, they're done. We know that. If they lose on Wednesday, they're probably done. They have to at least get to Thursday. But that's just off the top of the head. We'll look, you know, that'll give you the sort of the rendering you need. And then other than that, we're going to kind of focus on Virginia this year, since we're not going to Greensboro. I can breathe a little bit this year. Usually when I'm there, as you know, Jeff, cause you covered a tournament with me a few years ago. It's wall to wall, 24 hours a day basketball. At the end of it all, you barely can drag yourself home. I'm going to take advantage of the fact that this week I'm not there having to do that. I'll focus on Virginia every pregame. And this is going to be tougher this week because there's less lead time. But I do a column called What UVA Basketball Fans Need to Know About the Next Opponent. We'll know around 2 or 2:15 on Wednesday who the next opponent is. We've played them, so at least I have that. The scouting report's already done, but I'll kind of update the stats and that kind of thing with the scouting report on that team. We'll have that out there. We'll probably do a podcast to kind of go over that verbally so that those who are too lazy to read, hint, hint, can get the verbal, can get the verbal approach to that. But then, yeah, you know, assuming Virginia wins Thursday, they play Friday night, a little bit more lead time as far as that goes. And so we'll focus on Virginia, and we're looking ahead to Selection Sunday. So busy week, and then we're getting ready for Sunday.
So busy week at AFP. Stay close to get all of your ACC and Virginia sports, as well as news and politics. A lot of things happening on the AFP site. For Chris Graham, AFP editor, I am Jeff Fife. Have a great week.